This is the Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. I'm Grace Cavalieri. We're on location in Washington, D.C. with writers Jonah Colson and Caroline Bock, who are the co-editors of a new book from the Washington Writers Publishing House, which is a time-honored institution, a time-honored literary press. And so, Caroline and Jonah, hi. And hello. I want to start with Jonah to describe the big, fat, huge book I'm holding in my hand.
I know. Look at this. Look at this.
Wow. You went big.
It's amazing.
Tell us what's in it.
I mean, go big or go home, right? So we went big. This is America's Future, Poetry and Prose in Response to Tomorrow. It features 164 diverse voices from across the DMV, Washington, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. And since the work was accepted from writers that had ties to the DMV, it also offers poetry and prose from other places, from people from West Virginia, Florida, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, California, Washington State, and even Uruguay, right? The anthology opens with prose from Congressman Jamie Raskin, and is followed by a collaborative poem from E. Ethelbert Miller and Miho Quinas. But it's really just a stunning collection that provides some literary insights into what's next in this current climate that we live in here and what we can dare to imagine to happen.
It's beautiful. There's nothing quite like it. I weighed it on my bathroom scale, and I can tell you there's nothing quite like it. Caroline, I mentioned that you were co-editor with Jonah Colson and co-president of the Washington Writers Publishing House. So this is a nationally honored institution that you two guys are heading. Mm-hmm. So tell us, Caroline, about the press and how this project is an exemplar of what you do.
Mm-hmm. Well, first, thank you, Grace, for having us. I mean, we are just thrilled to be here. The Washington Writers Publishing House is a really unusual institution. We have been around 50 years. We were established in Washington, D.C. by four hippie poets, and we have evolved over the 50 years to publish not only poetry, but fiction, creative nonfiction, and now works in translation. And we, as Jonah and I were looking at the future, realized we had this big 50th anniversary coming up. And we said, we have to bring the world of DC, Maryland, Virginia writers together in a new anthology,
whoa,
especially in these very uncertain times, and talk about what's next.
Whatever got into you two? This is so crazy.
I know. I did keep saying to Jonah, I want it to be big. We did not quite expect that we would do 526 pages, I think, of poetry, prose, graphic story, a short play. I mean, it is the most ambitious project the Washington Writers Publishing House has done to date.
And it is available. We might add that it's available right now.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Like the testament of our time.
Yes, it just came out in September. And, you know, for a small nonprofit literary press that really focuses on the DMV, it intersects the political and the personal, which I think is sort of in our DNA as a literary press based in D.C.
Wow.
I mean, I know you've often said D.C. is the poetry capital
of the world.
And the outpouring from our community for this anthology was just astounding. We had over 500 submissions within, you know, a 2-month period.
Not doable. But Caroline, you did it. And I have you on the griddle now. So let's hear your piece that's in the book and set it up. Caroline Bock.
Yes. So thank you, Grace. So I wrote a short prose piece. I write microfictions to full-length novels, but I'm particularly was thinking of the moment we were in as I went for a walk one night in the park across the street. And while this is fiction, has many elements of truth. It does have one a phrase that people may be a little bit unfamiliar with if they're not of the Jewish faith, Avinu Malkeinu, which means my God, my King, my Father. in the story, and I use it as a refrain. So I'll be in a volcano. But the title is An American Lament, Caroline Bock. She's strange, isn't she? Strolling through the park at this hour, a starless night with the storm threatening, wind and rain, more rain than we've seen in months. The grass in the park hasn't been cut for weeks. She's singing now. Would you call it a dirge or a lament? Texts one neighbor to another. Not even in English. If they knew it was about communal grief, would that make them think differently of her? The words can be interpreted as our father or our king, though she prefers our father, since she is addressing them to his ghost, calling on him to wrap the snow-scented winds around her thinly shawled shoulders, to see the slash of deer, a fox and raccoon that cut through the fir trees, to hear her ask, snow. He knows how she loves snow. Alvinu Malkanu, she sings out, Alvinu Malkanu. They wonder if one of them should call her cute husband or just be done with her. The strange neighbor night singing. Stranger than us, emoji, laughing face with tears. Let's call 911 before something happens, they conclude. Here, she's free of all the regrets of a dutiful life. The only one with her is Pop, a ghost, who agrees that she should stroll the park anytime she likes, that snow would be better than rain, that she should have slept with them all, that America should be better, and that she should sing louder, sing for snow, sing for tomorrow. Sing
for snow. That is Caroline Bock from America's Future. And while we have her, I'll tell you a little bit about Caroline. She has a new novel coming out any day, well, June, and it's called The Other Beautiful People, and it's coming out by Regal House. She also has an award-winning fiction piece called Carry Her Home, a short story collection. She has two young adult novels by St. Martin's Press. They are Lie and Before My Eyes, and she's been co-president since 2022. Of the Washington Writers Publishing House and co-editor of this big, fat, massive, beautiful tome. And now Jonah, co-editor, is here, and we want to hear your poem in the book.
Sure. So this poem is in 14 lines. It's called List of the House Speaker's Concessions, and it sort of just imagines, you know, there's been a lot of turmoil in Congress, and remember when there was difficulty in electing a House Speaker, and I'm sure that'll come around again. So it's just sort of a play, an imaginary play on a list of the concessions. So list of the House Speaker's concessions. 1, you will have to recognize that many birds have feathers but cannot fly. 2, we will let you scream the bird scream once a week. 3, you can eat chicken soup on Tuesdays. 4, you must allow the prophet to rise and remember to let us have it. 5, many members will hide your reading glasses. 6, the house will often remind you that you are a man in a sinkhole. 7, on the days we don't work, you don't have to brush your hair. 8, people who live here do not complain about the wind. 9, you will let our eyes sharpen enough to slaughter small goats. 10, you will be surprised how light the gavel is, but you cannot show this shock. 11, any member can have wine on Fridays. 12, efforts to speak in third person will be removed like a solitary glove. 13. The House insists that we are always 1 minute away from catastrophe. 14. Above all, you will not appear to be too helpful. It can be suspicious.
Jonah is a poet and a professor and a translator and the author of a book of poems, Said Through Glass. He's also a translator of Aguas Waters by the poet Miguel Avero. And I said he's co-editor of two anthologies here at the Washington Writers Publishing House, and his poems have been in the most prestigious magazines. How do you get in Plowshares, Jonah? That's hard. Thank you.
I don't know. I sent them in and it happened.
And other good magazines too. And as I said, co-president of the Washington Writers Publishing and co-editor of America's Future. So we are now going to find out how all this happened. Caroline, how many poets and writers did you invite? And then how did you curate it? How did it begin? I mean, you've got this idea. You know there's a population out there. How do you summon them? And then what do you do with them when you get all these submissions? In one sentence.
Thank you, Grace. In one sentence. I think you build a community to start with. And that's been a huge effort of both Jonah and I to be out there in the community. We do around the DC area free, what we call literary salons, 3-hour events where we invite the public free of charge to write with us, to hear us read, to talk with us. And we've been doing this for the past 2 years. So that's been really fun. And we saw people's hunger to have a chance to speak out, speak their truths now. And that became like an urgent call to us when we were starting to think, what do we do for the 50th? So we did an open submissions, and which brought us about 80% of the work, Joan, I would say, and about 20%. We went out to well-known writers, yourself included, Grace, to join us, our press mates, who we know have quality work out there, contributed. We are a cooperative press, which means all volunteer, essentially, and people have stayed involved with us for 20, 30 years. And they are well-published writers. You're going to hear a few. David Diebenbach, for example, at Georgetown University contributed, and others who are both published with us and friends of ours. But about 80% was just open call. We want to build the most vibrant regional press that we can. And this anthology really is a marker for that. But it was also out of this urgency that we felt that people out there at this moment of all this anxiety and uncertainty wanted a chance to write their truths.
Well, Jonah, tell us what you encountered. For instance, did you two meet every week? What are the logistics here? Did you two have equal submissions and you both had copies of everything and then you collaborated? How did that work with you two as editors?
So we both kind of formed mini committees regarding the poetry or the prose. And so I would be in communication with the poetry committee that was helping me read the submission. And Carolyn and I normally meet once a week in general. So it was definitely sort of something that we were doing and working on. So we would meet, and then when we accept something really solid about it, I started to generate a Microsoft Word document. And so we had a form for what we wanted the anthology to be, you know, initially, you know, the three sections. So we started sort of filling in the three sections. Caroline, when she accepted the prose, would sort of fill in and create rhythm and match narrative. And it really just kind of snowballs and builds, has its own life, and it's something sort of magical that happens, I think, when you're doing an anthology like this.
I think it's organic, Jonah, right? I mean, you started with the poetry, because poetry always rules at the Washington Writers Publishing House. So Jonah, and we have more poets as a result in the anthology. I would say about 70% poetry, but it was really laying the poetry out first, and then seeing how the prose, both fiction and nonfiction, spoke to it. Probably the biggest challenge was when we reached out to some of the local politicians. And the one we heard from was Jamie Raskin, the congressman from Maryland who wanted to participate. And of course, if you've dealt, Grace, with politicians, you know, they're not always the most forthcoming with their literary work.
He came through.
He came through.
And his daughter and his sister as well.
His sister, Erica Raskin, who is a wonderful writer.
So how many years is this in the making?
It took about a year, right, Caroline? Mm-hmm. I would say.
About a year.
From start to finish.
A year in your young lives. That was good. Jonah, let's begin because it's all about the content. And you give us a poem you've chosen and tell us who wrote it and a little bit about that person.
Well, this first poem I would like to share is by David Keplinger, who is a well-known poet, and he teaches at American University. I think this year he won a wonderful fellowship. He's in Rome, but he's a wonderful poet as well as a musician and person. And this poem is called Snow, and it's early on in the first section. Snow by David Keplinger. In the tyranny, the children stand at windows watching it snow. There is aliveness now, and then in the tyranny, there comes the hustle of a deer mouse over snow, passing through a gorge of snow, hard snow, very small footprints everywhere. The children watch the owl about to swoop down. The owl watches the mouse, but nothing moves, not the owl, or the mouse, or the tyranny.
Mm. Beautiful. Caroline, give us something.
I am going to give you Emily Holland, who is the editor of Poet Lore, and her debut poetry collection just won the Jean Feldman Poetry Prize from the Washington Writers Publishing House. So it's a wonderful coincidence that we have this writer in our anthology. Well, not a coincidence. Jonah has such a sharp eye. He has such a sharp eye for poets. So Emily is a poet out of Baltimore, part of the LGBTQ community, and her poem is called Elopement, and it has a lot of hope in it. A lot of our work is dark as we look at the future, but her work is full of hope. Elopement by Emily Holland. The desert has its own quiet desire, spliced with cracks and canyons, punctuated by the slightest growth. We go in January and see snow, even the melt, a delayed departure. We drive until the roads turn to dust, pass a white piano, count 8 sleeping palms, arrive where backyard Joshua trees form an altar for an elopement the previous week. On the nightstand of the BNB, a dried corsage. Leftover wine in the fridge. We get high and talk about marriage again. No plans for engagement. Maybe skip the charade. Elope too. It must have been beautiful. Moonlight over iced over snow. Stars flickering their own fireless chorus. No objections from tumbleweeds. Just the high desert mountains and their lilac blessing on the horizon.
And that was Caroline reading from the book. Jonah, hit us with a poem.
So I would like to share a poem called Predicting the Future by David Eppenbach, who is a pressmate of ours. We published his short story collection a few years ago. Predicting the Future. No, they'll never outlive us. Not these house guests so dependent on the unwashed dishes in the sink. The imperfectly cleaned countertop, the spaces we leave behind our cupboards. There are tropical versions, much larger, I know. Thousands of species, and maybe those ones are ready for the apocalypse, but not these. These set their rhythms to our light bulbs, crawl our surface, eat what we do. They can survive immersion, I hear, can live for 30 days just eating the glue off the back of a postage stamp. But when we stop using first-class mail, even the evolution of the cockroach is driven by our poisons, generation after generation scrambling to adapt to the way we kill. They multiply, but only in the hollow of our lives.
Wow. Caroline, give us two together, and then we are getting a real sense of this book, The Various Voices. By just listening to you two, we are really getting the pulp of this book. So keep going. Caroline, give us two in a row.
Sure. And Joan is such a beautiful reader. Poetry.
It's true. Oh,
it's true. So two. The first one is by Tony Medina. He is a Howard University professor. I think this is the first time we've been publishing him. So If I Don't Come Home by Tony Medina. If I don't come home, the emergency money is in the closet, in a brown shoebox, the one wrapped in rubber bands, enough for 4 months. Hopefully, I'll be back by then. If I'm not, get up each morning and be sure to go to school each day, study hard to be a lawyer. Then come send for me. God willing, if I'm still alive, I'll walk through that court with this red, white, blue flag once separated us, now waving above. Your handsome shoulders, my beautiful boy, a man, defending mommy.
That was hard.
That was hard.
To get through. These are rich, rich, rich poems. Give us another.
This is by a Virginia writer, Susan Bucci Mockler. It's actually the last poem in the collection, the last work. I think it has both sides of the coin, the desire to speak the truth and the desire to want that better future that's in the collection. And so we ended with it. Mystical Cities by Susan Bucci Mockler, after Italo Calvino and Mary Bucci Bush. One, this city of want. This is a city of want. The trees sag with the weight of it. The streets are empty because of it. All the people you encountered are filled with it. They don't want to live this way, but they have no choice. It is the way to survive in this city. It is the way they can say they are part of it, that they belong, to ensure that no one will try to take away their house or car, their name, their laminated certificates of accomplishment. They ache because of it. They know it is possible they may die because of it, though sometimes they dream of life without it. Upon awakening, some of them will think, it is morning, it is past time. Let this city be new. Let it be a garden. Let it be a city of tea in the garden, a city of delight. Two, the city that fits in the palm of your hand. Think of it, a city so small it fits in the palm of your hand. You could carry it with you during the day and hold it close to you at night. No one would have to know that you carry a secret city with you. It would be as though you live in two worlds, one here and the other. The city that lives in the palm of your hand, a city you can transport yourself to at any time. It would be a city of your imagining, a city of no cars, of trees heavy and fragrant with fruit lining the streets. Magnolias bursting in the sun, a soaking rain when needed. At night, a clear sky that lets you see and count every star. If you brought anyone with you to the city that fits in the palm of your hand, they would not believe what they saw. They would think it a dream. You do not have to tell them. It is your city. It is the truth.
So highly imagined, so passionate. Every page here has someone's real felt life. Jonah, it is your turn. Give us two poems.
So the first poem I would like to share is by Mel Eden, and it's called Thanksgiving After the Election. Mel Eden herself is a British poet based in Maryland, and she runs the open mic series at Manor Hill in Maryland. Thanksgiving After the Election. When America tucks into Turkey, we invite international friends. A Chinese doctor brings dumplings to reheat. We steam them in the kitchen, chat over the aroma of salted pork. A German professor with impeccable manners opens a French Merlot, updates me on his kittens. A couple from India bring homemade gnocchi because they love cooking Italian. A sharply dressed postdoc shares a honey wine from home, pours samples of Ethiopian gold into crystal glasses. After dinner, we play Este es un pato in seven languages. I look around the room. Some people do not want us in America. They see poison. They see job takers, invaders, criminals, snakes. But at this Thanksgiving, all I see is beauty, a radiant potpourri of cultures, love, and hope.
Truth. And I'm so glad you got some poetry about those people who have come into the country, as we all have.
Yeah.
Our lineage, each of us has a lineage from beyond. And what else have you chosen?
This last poem is by Gabby Gilliam, which is new to us. And that's one of the wonderful things, I think Caroline would agree, is finding new authors and people we don't know. When you read the work, it's like, wow, who is this person? You want to know them and invite them in. Right? She's a mother, teacher, and poet who lives in the D.C. area with her son. And it's a short poem. And I've chosen these two poems to end with because they kind of talks about our two most American holidays, Thanksgiving and the 4th of July. This one's called Firework Display by Gabby Gilliam. We play at democracy, pretend the weight of our broken system doesn't sit on our brows heavier than a crown. So we'll flock to open fields and waterways to watch the sky fill with flammable tokens of freedom. Each explosion, a distraction from our exhaustion, indifferent to the errant sparks, they are ready to set the world on fire.
Well, since you two editors are actually human beings, I'm going to ask you each one to answer this question. What did you personally have to overcome to get this book out in the world? Caroline, you first. Was dinner late?
Well, dinner's often late in our house, Grace, but we do always sit down together. I think that I really wanted to expand the idea of what prose was in it. So we accepted an Instagram graphic story, which I have never worked with graphic stories before. We accepted a speech from Jamie Raskin. We accepted an essay from Marvin Kalb, 95 years old, which I had to give him edits for. Marvin Kalb being, you know, CBS correspondent.
I remember him well.
Noted, wrote a piece really imploring journalists to stand up at this moment. And here I am giving him edits. So that was really being, I think, doing something that I've heard you encourage writers to do, to have courage, to really know that your voice and skill set is valued. And he took my, Marvin Kalb at 95 took my edits. So that was, so really working with some new forms, And also working with writers all different backgrounds and skill sets. I was thrilled when we had, like Jonah, some new writers come in and really had to work very closely with them to make sure their stories were shaped.
What a good answer. What a good answer. I'm so glad that I asked you that, because I didn't know the inner workers of your soul before.
And Jonah, I did get dinner on the table almost every night at some point.
Yeah, I'll believe that when I see it. So, Jonah, what was the personal challenge that you had to back up into and overcome?
Well, I will echo what Caroline said, of course, because I agree with everything Caroline says. Something new in here, you know, make it new. And so we accepted, Caroline accepted some, you know, the wonderful, and the play is in here. We also accepted a more visual poetry. We have an erasure. We also accepted some hand-drawn pictures that accompany some of the poems in the book. So it kind of makes it more interactive, right? I mean, and we're expanding, you know, what our meaning of literature is, I think, a lot in this book.
And really,
you know, showcasing a lot of different styles.
And what is the title of this book again?
America's Future, Poetry and Prose in Response to Tomorrow.
It's a beauty. And where can we get it?
Everywhere.
Okay. Start with Amazon.
Everywhere. Your favorite online retailers, everywhere.
Ubiquitous. Well, I was lucky enough to be included in the book, and I'm going to end the program with reading the poem these two editors were good enough to accept. And it's a metaphor. It's called an extended metaphor, which is a bird in the crib representing our country. The bird in the crib. We didn't know what to make of it. So small and born with a hole in its heart. Yet we knew a bird was just a surround for a wound and must be cared for. We treated it like snow, that soft. We made diapers, shapeshift, to hold a bird. Bottles of milk, too. I am telling you, it was our baby, and we breathed it to light. And peeking in, one early dawn, our bird was gone. After all this love. Don't you know, the passersby said, birds will fly. After years of the beautiful and fantastic rainbows and clouds where cardinals became bluebirds and eagles soared free, our bird returned, muddied and hurt, wings and legs broken. Something we could never have prevented, flight, then flying in the wrong country. One shooter even said, birds should stay in their nest. And it's a miracle our bird found his way back to us. Once again, our birthright is safe in the crib, where we can tend it and remind it and begin again with tears that calm the dark, lifting the curtain to see the stars. Thank you both, my beautiful editors. And this is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress. The program is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions. Post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank the Library of Congress for making the program possible. Funding is provided by the Sinipid Fund, the Rivada Foundation of the Logan family, and friends of the program, Natalie Canivore and Sandy Jackson Cohen. Mike Turpin's our engineer, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.